7:42, the United Nations defines an ageing society as one in which more than 7% of the population is 65 or older, an aged society with more than 14%, and super-aged with more than 21%. As of last year, South Korea has become aged and is expected to become super-aged around 2026. In addition, the fertility rate here hit a record low, actually less than a baby on average per fertile woman last year. So how will all this affect productivity going forward? We've heard a lot about this demographic cliff that we're supposed to be going off in the past. Now we can welcome on the line Professor James Ferrer from the Department of Economics at Dartmouth College, who's visiting Korea at the moment to attend the Hallim Stanford University Asia Pacific Innovation Conference today and tomorrow. Thank you for joining us. We're just trying to catch up with our guest. I'm sorry about that. We are expecting him to be with us in the next few moments. Also, we'll be discussing sport, of course, in a few moments. So stay with us for that, because there was a certain momentous event over the weekend. Champions League final. It wasn't the fairy tale that we'd been hoping and anticipating for a certain South Korean forward, Son Heung-min. But when I say that we've been anticipating, of course, that would exclude all the delighted Liverpool fans. So that's a little taste of what's to come in a few moments. But I think we now can gather our focus and return to the question of a demographic cliff. And Professor James Ferrer, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So we talk about these aged and super aged societies. Are they necessarily bad news?
Well, I think we don't know to some degree, in part because it's very, very new. And the kind of things that I think about are, how does the age structure of the population affect how productive the society is? And one of the things I've found is that having lots of people in the 40-year-old age group is good for productivity. Now, that means having lots of people who are in their 20s and 30s and lots of people who are in their 50s and 60s is necessarily bad. So for the last 30 or 40 years, many of these Asian countries have benefited from having that younger cohort get smaller and smaller and the 40-year-old cohort get bigger. We're about to see that 50- and 60-year-old cohorts getting bigger. And my research suggests that that might be a drag on productivity, but not quite as bad a drag on productivity as having lots of 20- and 30-year-olds.
Also, in defense of older citizens, people are aging more slowly, aren't they, these days? They are able to potentially be economically more active for a lot longer than previous decades and centuries.
I think that's true. And there's been a lot of economic research to show that health conditions when you're young actually make a big difference in your health, how long you live and how healthy you are when you're older. And the older cohorts that we're seeing now have had much better health conditions than the older cohorts that we've seen in the past. And so I think there is some hope there. I do think that, you know, 60 is the new 50 and 50 is the new 40, and I hope that that's the case.
You've done a lot of research, I understand, on age distribution of workforce and productivity. And if we go back more than a decade to 2007, a study showed the age group 40 to 49 was actually the most productive. Let's return to that idea. Let's talk about how the picture may or may not have evolved by 2019. What are you seeing?
Well, one of the things I've done for this conference that I'm here in Korea for is updated some of those results from 2007. And so the data that I had for that study only went up to 1990. The data that I'm using for this study goes all the way through 2010. And one of the things that I'm noticing as I update the data is the results for the early cohorts, the results for young cohorts being bad for productivity, continue to be the same, more or less. But particularly the fifth-year-old cohort doesn't look nearly as bad in the more recent data as it did in the past, which would be consistent with what you were just saying, that 50 might be the 40 in the sense that 50-year-olds might be less of a drag on productivity than they were in the past because people are getting healthier, they're living longer, and they're just more vital at 50 than they used to be.
So what kind of public policies need to be prepared? For example, an obvious one would be postponing the legal retirement age.
I am wholly in favor of trying to keep people in the workforce longer. To be honest with you, the productivity things that I study are probably are important, but I think the thing that most societies are going to really wrestle with is the dependency ratios, is dealing with the fact that there's going to be lots of people retired who are consuming a lot of health care, who are also going to continue to consume in retirement. And I think that's going to put an enormous amount of pressure on our tax systems to pay for all of that for the retired generations. And because that's happening worldwide, I think the whole world is going to be under a lot of stress with regards to the tax systems. And I think the young people, and there's going to be less of them, are going to find that their tax rates need to be higher in order to pay for the benefits of the old folks. And I think politically that's going to cause a lot of stress in a lot of countries.
Yeah, and that's a tremendous problem that we're facing. This is where the demographic cliff comes in, because we can talk as much as we want to about how we can delay the problem by keeping older people in the workplace and making sure that people in their 60s are recognized, perhaps even in the same way that people in their 40s once were. But if we haven't got enough young people coming through a few decades down the line, that looks pretty disastrous, doesn't it?
It does, and I confess it concerns me. And what's interesting is, because birth rates have been so low for so long, even a turnaround on birth rates at this point won't help. And in fact, if anything, it would hurt, because the birth rates won't create new workers. A rise in birth rates won't create new workers for 20 years. And so in the meantime, that just creates demographic stress on the other side, where you've got to support the young and the old at the same time, and the middle group gets really squeezed. So I agree. One of the things that I find a little heartening is that the first countries that have gone through this, and the first countries that have been going to go through this, are countries that are relatively wealthy and have pretty strong political structures. So we see Japan and Germany are really at the vanguard of this. And I think it's good that those countries are going through it first, because they have political structures that might be capable of dealing with them. I think as we kind of roll along, countries that have less stable politics, and actually countries that are less rich, are going to start to go through this. And I think that'll be even more potential. That has even more potential for bad things to happen.
Well, thank you very much. Good luck today when you give your speech at the conference on the subject of demographics and productivity in Asia. Hopefully you'll have a few ears that will take notice and perhaps bring about policies to at least mitigate the damage for now. Professor Faira.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for having me.
James Faira, the professor and vice chair of the economics department at Dartmouth College there. It's actually a subject that comes back around quite frequently. Would you like to have your say? £1013 for 51 per message. Do you see nearly enough being done to encourage women to have babies, to encourage families to have more children? We'd like your thoughts as well via Twitter, if you'd like to get in touch that way, at EFM This Morning.